Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio, Steel Waves Radio, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, YouTube, CastBox, all the places that you listen to podcasts. It's the Dark Mark Show. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian, and returning this week, and I'm glad to have her, although she's not going to be on camera again. She's always the best-looking person on the show and hates to show herself, but
everybody's favorite. Hello.
No, except for this show. Everybody's favorite vegan heavy metal DJ, Hannah Bock.
Hey, guys.
And Hannah, you will acknowledge you're the second best looking person on this show.
I'm okay with that.
You're okay with that. Because the first best looking person on the show, taking your crown for a change, is my friend, great comedian. I've known him, I've only known him for about 5 years. I remember when I met you, and we're going to talk about that. But he just came out and wrote a book, and it's already one of the top bestsellers in the self-improvement on Amazon. It's The Art of Being Yay, the man that lights up a room every time he walks in with his big smile and infectious laugh, Aiden Park.
Hello, hi.
Hi.
And you do look better than me, okay? So I'm just...
Oh, no, just I don't.
Well, you're the one wearing a Cruel Intentions t-shirt, so you win today.
Yes, oh, my God. This was $7 at Target.
See, that's the thing. When you're your size, you can get things like that. When you're my size, I got this Plan 9 from Outer Space shirt was not $7, but it's still fine. Anyway, Aiden, besides your book, which we're gonna plug mercilessly, and I recommend everybody get this. We have a lot of people that there's a lot of people everywhere that need some positive reinforcement, and you're the guy to give it to them, not me. You're the guy to give it to him. The most negative person in comedy is going to interview the most positive person in comedy.
You're hardly the most negative person in comedy.
No, I know.
Really?
People say I got to drop the goth thing because I'm too positive. But
positive.
Yeah. So, yeah. But we have sponsors. We have a lot of sponsors. Really quick, Audible is one of our sponsors. You don't have your book's not on Audible yet, but
it is. It's submitted. So we're just waiting for it to get caught up.
Okay, well, it's going to be on Audible. So when you find out that Aiden's book is on Audible, go to audibletrial.com/DMS, and you'll get a free and also a free Audible original. And one of the Audible originals that everybody's raving about is the Audible the version of The Sandman. That Neil Gaiman wrote and that he narrates, and James McAvoy plays Dream. Everybody's going crazy for that. You get two books, two Audible originals, one book and one Audible original. Get Aiden's book when it goes on Audible. I know I will. But use my code audibletrial.com/DMS so he and I both get paid.
Awesome.
And Aiden, are you vegan by chance?
I am not vegan.
Okay. I still got to take you to Doomy's Home Cooking, whether you're vegan or not. Mm-hmm. The best vegan food in L.A. Hannah will tell you all about it.
Oh, yeah. They have their own version of the Big Mac. They have jalapeno poppers, cake, shrimp po' boys, which Mark likes, spicy chicken sandwiches, fun fries. And they have Nex-Mex, which is their Mexican vegan food. And they have flautas and best nachos. They were voted best nachos in, 2018?
Support your restaurants, especially Doomy's Home Cooking. 1253 Vine Street, right where the M Bar used to be, right in that parking lot. I'm actually going tomorrow. I'm going to take my former co-host, Nicole Six. We're going to discuss a script that we're working on and get some delicious food, maybe some chicken parmesan, maybe flautas. I don't know, but Doomy's Home Cooking. And real quick, we are sponsored by Hustler Hollywood.
Oh, really?
Yes. I figured that would perk you up, Aiden. So
yeah.
there'll be a code in this. And if you're watching this on YouTube or listening to this on the podcast catcher, go to the comments because there's going to be a code there for 20% off whatever you want. Lingerie, butt plugs, dildos, lube, whatever you want. They got good clothes. And just 20% off and you get a free gift, free naughty gift. And Spy Associates, another sponsor of ours, you also get 20% off with our code over any order over $249. They have cameras that you can put in your smoke detectors, GPS trackers, bug detectors, spying on somebody or find out somebody's spying on you. Go to Spy Associates. All sorts of James Bond kind of shit. And the last sponsor, it's going crazy. We're on every network and every sponsor. Raise Energy Drink. R-A-Z-E. My favorite energy drink. I love this stuff. This is not the 7-Eleven crap, the Red Bull. This is stuff you get at like GNC and gyms. Zero calories, zero crash, zero calories, zero carbs, zero crash. I got a 12-pack of Galaxy Burst, and you can too. 15% off. This kind of tastes like Fruit Loops.
Ooh.
Delicious. Okay.
Ooh, I wish I had one of those right now.
I'll ship one to you. So, you. But then again, go to our code, you get 15% off. These are, I'm telling you, not only do these taste great, and they have sour gummy worms, they have other flavors. Baja Lime, that tastes like Baja Blast at the Taco Bell. But like I say, this really perks you up. And no crap.
Yeah. Like I need to be more, right? But
I have to match Aiden's energy tonight, which is going to be a hard task, as you can see already.
Yeah.
Hannah said, have seen you. Hannah saw you a couple years ago when we both performed at Angie Crumb's roast.
Yeah.
Right. And I said something about trying to figure out the diameter of Uranus, but that was, you know, it's a roast. That's kind of the things that we say.
Oh, it depends on the day.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
The first time I met you was at Tuesday Thomas's show at the Clown House.
That's right.
5 years ago, right before I left for New Orleans, I did a show, and we both performed. I was like, wow, this guy's great.
Oh, and thank you.
We talked after the show, and you were super nice.
Yeah, nice I was.
Yeah, what happened?
What do you mean?
I'm kidding. No, you're still nice, of course.
I'm still nice, yeah. I don't know if I was kind of green back then. I think I was like maybe 3 years in, so I wasn't sure how my comedy was.
Well, I think you just came from San Francisco, is that correct? Like 2015?
Oh, I moved down here in 2009. So okay. I've been there for a while, but I started comedy down here. And I was about 3 years in when I met you.
Okay. And so, Hannah, let me go through the whole story.
Okay.
It's quite a story. And it's amazing. This is what's great about your book. So it's amazing after all the things that have happened to you that you are still positive and you're teaching people how to be positive. And you really need to teach us how to be yay, because we need the yay in our life.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. Well, go to the Hustler and get the biggest butt plug you can, and then measure your ass diameter. That's a good way to start, right?
You think I should start with the biggest, or should I start with the smallest and go?
Oh, just go for the win. Oh,
okay, all right. So, and make sure you get lube with that when you for 20% off.
Douche first.
Yes. So anyway, I was gonna do something with a Galaxy can, but let's go. Let's go back with the yeah. So you were born in Seoul, South Korea.
Oh, yes, I was.
What's it like growing up in Seoul, South Korea? I have no idea.
I mean, it's not that much different than here, except it is super hyper competitive from where I, you know, they're very all about like getting the grades and making sure you accomplish and da-da-da-da-da, you know?
The Asian stereotype.
Yeah, that's right. and Koreans, okay, we've suffered a lot. We really have. Like, there was the Japanese and the North Korean invasion, and so Koreans are kind of effed up.
I was going to say, like, you know, after all that, I mean, you hear about North Korea, and, you know, you see Kim Jong-un and all that, but you don't hear a lot about, I mean, South Korea seems, except for the Olympics, you don't hear a lot about them.
Yeah. South Korea is interesting. So when there was the North Korea and South Korea split, South Korea kind of didn't have a culture of its own. So we adapted like whatever the Western culture, you know?
Right.
So they are very heavily Baptist there, very religious. And we're very, we want to be like the U.S. because U.S. is kind of what, you know, thought like saved. At least this was the case in 1989 or 1990. When I moved here, you know, and so we adapted the value of the Western culture for sure.
Mm-hmm. And that's like when you were 5 years old, you got addicted to Sister Act, the movie.
Yeah, I did.
That was a good thing.
You like Sister Act, Hannah?
When I was a little girl, yeah, because that was the only movie playing, you know, on our little TV that you'd turn the button thing, you know, the knob.
Oh yeah, really?
You yeah, had one of that one.
Me too.
A lot of similarities between South Korea and Ketchikan, Alaska.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's from Alaska, so I guess she sort of had the same thing. Just had to turn the TV with a knob and watch Sister Act.
Yeah. You're from Alaska, Hannah?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. It's like my mom lives in Alaska right now, actually.
Oh, what part?
Yeah, Fairbanks.
Fairbanks, okay. I lived there for a little bit when I was really tiny. I'm from Ketchikan, which is another little island.
Oh my God. I'm obsessed with Alaska because my favorite singer is Jewel. And so I listened to her biography, Never Broken. And she's been stuck.
And oh, so yeah. Van. Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's a whole, this goes around, you know, here's the 6 degrees of separation. Jewel, I used to, my first job when I was in college, I was a host at Denny's. And Jewel, before she was famous, would go in the bathroom and use the bathroom to change at that Denny's.
Oh, my God. Wow. Cool.
So when I was like 16, I met Jewel before she was famous.
Was that in that area? Where was it?
In Pacific Beach.
Okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah, she used to.
I love Jewel.
Jewel's great. She was nice then, and you know, I remember, you know, when she blew up and after she blew up, and then she's reinvented herself so many times.
Yeah.
Well, the first time she heard herself on the radio, she cried because she thought she sounded like Kermit the Frog.
Oh, sir, you're so.
Exactly.
I listen to her all the time. I find that she's very, very spiritual, and it's very, I don't know. I love listening to her. It calms me down. I love it. I really do.
Okay.
Good song.
What's that?
I'm sorry?
Foolish Games. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
So if you get a little too manic, we'll start singing Foolish Games and calm you down.
I know all the lyrics, so I'm ready.
But what was it about Sister Act that really resonated with you as a 5-year-old kid?
Okay, so what happened was my mom and I, my mom had a video store, and we lived in the back of the video store, right? We lived there.
Oh, wow.
And okay. I was playing with a friend, and he had to leave, and I was really sad as a 5-year-old, and I was, like, just sobbing, you know? I was really sad. Mm-hmm. And my mom played Sister Act on TV, and she was just watching these singing, dancing nuns, and I remember when I saw that, I stopped crying, and I got so involved into the movie, and I just sat there quietly through the whole thing, and it became my favorite movie. So I watched that movie over and over and over, and I wore the tape out, and it was such a comforting movie for me, you know?
Did you dress up as a nun and sing and dance and do the whole thing, or?
No, but I do remember having a black towel that I would throw over my head, pretending like I'm one of the nuns.
I'd put that in the book if I was you.
I forgot about that until now. Thank you.
now we'll have to pull all the copies off the shelf.
Yeah.
Redo them and then bring yeah.
So. And redo it. Damn it.
So you moved when you were in your early teens?
No, I moved to the United States when I was 9 years old.
Oh, 9 years old.
Wait, just so you know, I like sitting like this because I'm a weirdo. But I am wearing shorts, so everybody.
That too, it's okay.
No, that's okay. I just, you know, it just, I wasn't sure if that was your leg or your dick, but I was trying to figure it out.
Oh, well, aren't I lucky?
Anyway, yeah, sit however you like. I don't care. But the more relaxed, the better. But why did your parents move to the United States when you were 9?
There was a specific incident that happened. My mom always wanted to kind of move, but this is in the book. I was actually playing in my neighborhood, and there was a kid, right? And I went up to him, and he kind of, like, ignored me. He pretended like he didn't see me. And I was like, hey, hello. And he was like, I'm not allowed to talk to you anymore. And I said, why? And he goes, because my dad told me that you don't have a dad, and that's the reason why you act like that. And so I ran home crying to my mom, told her about what happened. And my mom was like, what? And so she got up and she went right to the store where the dad worked, the dad of the kid, right?
Right.
And she came back 15 minutes later. She was like, that's it. We're moving to the United States. Pack your bags. We're going right now. We're going to go. We're going.
Wow.
I mean, it wasn't right then, but she told me, she announced that we were going.
Mm-hmm.
So she, in Korea, there's a really strong, like, sexism. There's a lot of just open discrimination for class. And just, I mean, this was back in the 90s, though, so...
So was this a class thing or a gay thing or what?
It was both. Single mother, right. You know, and also I was a quirky kid. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of money. And so it was a combination of all three, I think. Yeah.
And by the way, I don't know if you're aware of this, but you're a quirky adult as well.
I know.
I'm really a quirky kid, but I grew out of it. No, you didn't grow out of it. That's the way you are. It's great. We love it.
It is.
I embraced it. I can't. I don't know. I'm a weirdo. What can I say?
You're being yay.
Yeah.
So you moved to, was it San Francisco initially? Or?
Yes, we moved to San Francisco.
And
growing up in the video store.
I'm sorry?
What was it like growing up in the video store? I used to work at one when I was a teenager, and I just have so many fun memories.
Oh, it was so fun. I was such a big fan of movies when I was like 6, 7, 8, right?
Uh-huh.
And like we slept in the back room of the video store. And so we had, you know, we had all these videos and we had this great thing where if they rent two, we could recommend the third one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was so proud of our video store and I knew all of the movies by heart. Like
aww.
I knew what categories of, if Dark Mark came in, I would know what to give him, you know,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Movies or whatever, you know? And I knew each of my customers and they loved me and I loved them. And I would literally watch the store as a 6, 7, 8 year old while my mom would take a nap in the back or get some food or run errands. And it was that kind of time. And
mm-hmm.
It was so much fun. It really was.
Yeah.
It was yeah.
I gotta tell you, I worked at a video store as well. And it's the best job. I worked at the video store. It's such a fun job.
Absolutely.
Didn't pay anything, but it was...
Yeah, I didn't pay anything, but it was fun. Free rentals, and back when VHS was around, and you could watch so many movies.
So fun.
But like you say, it's good to know what somebody likes and recommend somebody something.
Mm-hmm.
I worked in a combination record and video store, and I would play some weird music, and people would just be like, "I want that," and then you know, like you say, I would know if somebody came up and they had something that I knew they wouldn't like. I'm like, "You're not gonna like this. You try this."
Yeah.
One. Yeah,
totally. I was like a video reviewer too. Like I would like, you know, the big movie franchise that was big back then was Chucky. My mom would let me watch these horror movies. Like we didn't think anything of it. So I would watch all, I had like some anxiety issues, which might have been as a result of that. But Chucky was big, right? So we would get Chucky 1, Chucky 2, and I remember Chucky 3 coming out and everybody being so excited about us getting Chucky 3. And it was such a disappointment. Do you remember Chucky 3?
Was that the one in military school or was that 4?
Right. It was bullcrap. It was terrible. And so, you know, it was very disappointing to have to explain to everybody, Chucky 3 is really not that great. And everybody going, okay, well, I want to see it anyway, taking it and coming back. Yeah, Chucky 3 was not that great. I was like, I know, isn't it disappointing? So we had a camaraderie over the terribleness of Chucky 3.
At least you prepared everybody for the suckiness of Chucky 3.
Oh, my God.
Some other people would be like, oh, I haven't seen it yet. You tell me. But you're like, yeah, no, it sucks.
It was terrible. Mm-hmm.
Hannah, which one was that?
The one you're in military school, right?
Oh, the military school one. Yeah, that one stinks.
Horrible.
And then, yeah, and then Bride and Chucky got it back, but it took a while.
I mean, yeah. It's not as bad as the latest one. I didn't like that. It was just weird. It wasn't Charles Lee Ray.
Well, I haven't seen the latest one.
Mm-hmm.
I keep thinking I'm going to watch it, and I was like, no.
I don't watch movies a lot now.
Mm-hmm. All movied out.
I'm all movied out.
So anyway, so you go to San Francisco and a better environment, I would think?
No.
Or people, or even worse?
It was an incredibly traumatizing experience for me moving to San Francisco.
How so?
How so? there was a bunch of situations. So when we moved to the United States, my mom brought me without a visa. So we came as undocumented immigrants, right? And we came here and...
There's the ISIS coming to get you, by the way.
Oh, well, great. I'm a citizen. You're a
siren, so yeah. So you're undocumented.
Yeah. But I was brought here undocumented, and first of all, I don't even know where to start. In Korea, I was well liked at school. I was at the top of my class. I was I was with my mom all the time, right? So I had a good emotional support, and we moved to the United States, and all of a sudden I can't speak the language. The kids don't understand. And I was fat in Korea, but like I never thought that it was a problem until I came to the States, and then they started making fun of me for being a fat kid. And I didn't know that I was such a fat kid. And so I had no friends all of a sudden, and I was all of a sudden terrible at school, and I couldn't communicate. And the way I connected with people, even back in Korea, was through humor and jokes and, creating camaraderie in that way. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have that. So I was very much alone at school. Back at home, my mom found a boyfriend. And she was hardly around. So I was left with my grandmother, who was a kitchen helper for a Korean restaurant at the time. And so I was home alone a lot. So I would go to school, not be able to communicate, not be able to get frustrated because I couldn't learn. I would come home and be alone. And so I went from being around people all the time to being around no one.
Right. Isolated in a room full of people to being isolated by yourself.
Right. It was really tough. And then the situation got even more complicated when my mom, the boyfriend that she had, got into dental school across the country. And she was going to say goodbye to him and stay with me, but he threatened her. He said, if you don't come with me, I will report you and your kid to the INS, so you're coming with me, whether you like it or not.
Wow.
So what she went. Guy. Sorry?
So what a lovely guy.
Yeah, he's a charming guy. So she went with him. And of course, she still loved him and still loved her. It was more complicated than that, but that was definitely part of the equation.
Right.
And so I was left with my grandmother, who didn't speak any English, in her senior government apartment, which poses problems. I'm not allowed to be there. I'm an undocumented immigrant, still having language problems, almost flunking out of school, having very little friends. I felt bad about my body, and I felt very isolated. So it was a very tough time. Sorry to bring everybody down.
Hannah, stop crying. Now, how did you get through that?
Poorly.
Really? You're laughing about it now.
Yeah, it was tough. It was bad. Yeah.
Was musical theater the thing that saved you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the other thing that I want to address is the whole gay thing. So I'm hitting puberty, right?
Oh, by the way, yeah, people, Gayden's gay. I don't know if you caught that yet.
Right. Surprise, in case somebody's saying, oh, yeah. I hope he, Yeah.
Yeah, you don't even have to say you're gay. You just have to laugh and we get it.
Right? Laugh like SpongeBob SquarePants. I look like him too, yellow and full of large holes. So I hit puberty, and again, that was another layer, like the whole God thing and the whole,
Right.
So I was suffering pretty badly until about 15 years old, until I did musical theater at school. I auditioned for something, and I got the part in the chorus, and it made me feel like I was a part of something, anything, and it made me feel like I had some kind of worth. And so it did kind of save me. It gave me something to look at that I felt excited about.
Mm-hmm. It's almost like the true story of Sister Act.
Yeah, that's right. It was. It saved my life, I would say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but wouldn't being in San Francisco as a young gay man wouldn't that be the right place or no?
It was not, because this was back in 2000, 2001, 1999. And so even though it was in San Francisco, in school, it was still okay to pick on gay kids, right? It was like, it was inner city San Francisco. It was not, it was inner city San Francisco where it's okay to just call kids a fag and you're fat and...
People call me all of that.
Yeah.
No, seriously, I mean, I'm not joking. And obviously, I'm sure you got it much worse than I did, but I've been called a fag for many reasons.
No.
When I was a kid, I was called, somebody literally said, because I like Doctor Who, I was a fag.
Yeah.
And it's
but
like.
I act like this, right?
And now like, people like Doctor Who.
So it was pretty obvious that I was gay. And then I didn't want to be gay, so I'd be like, no, I'm not, even though I knew I was, which just made it worse, right?
And by the way, I'm quoting. Should I not have said that word? Because I know it's on your back.
Oh, you mean the fag word?
Yeah.
You say whatever you want.
I got you under your yay, and I didn't mean to do that.
At, you know, YouTube haters, but I'm not going to give you a hard time about it.
Okay, I'm just quoting. So, and that's the last time I'll say that, because I know, like, your face kind of... But, I mean, you know, it's a hurtful word.
Sorry. Anyways,
you've been called that, and it's a hurtful word.
Yeah, it's a hurtful word.
But anyway, so this wasn't the place to have your sexual awakening as a young man.
It was. It became damaging later on. Wow, we're getting real into detail. And I cover all this in my book, by the way.
Like I said, I don't want you to read your book, but I'm just. These are all things that I found out about you that are curious.
Yeah.
We even saw a YouTube video of you singing More Than a Feeling by Boston, which took me
by surprise. I know. I'm a good singer.
You are a good singer. Hannah, I'm going to forward that to you.
Please do. Do that song.
It seems like an odd choice, though.
It was just something I was doing. I love it. I love those classic rock things. what are you going to do? I love karaoke.
We were just talking about that. I get invited to karaoke all the time, and my ex-girlfriend, I'm a karaoke widow, she used to go to karaoke far too much, and I just got burned out on it, but I can't sing like you, so.
Oh, well, thank you.
Anyway, so you were in musical theater, and was Jeremy Lin the musical, was that your first, like, was that a real professional production? Or?
That was way later.
Okay.
Yeah. So and yes, we did do that. We did put that together, and I did play Jeremy Lin. And I do have a joke. I mean, I look like I'm like a 17-year-old girl trapped in an Asian basketball player's body. I'm very tall, but I can't bounce balls. I can only bounce balls this way.
Hannah, if you don't know, Jeremy Lin is he's a Asian basketball player.
Okay.
And he's very good and probably the most successful Asian basketball player that's ever been in the NBA.
Yao Ming is pretty good.
I forgot about Yao Ming. You're right. But those are the two.
Yeah.
So Aiden did a musical about Jeremy Lin, which I don't who went to see that? Was it a lot of basketball fans or it was just
a lot of Asians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would imagine. So so you were doing musical theater for a while.
Right. Yes.
And so when you graduated high school, you just went into the theater, or?
No, actually, that's where things really fell apart. If things could get worse.
I really get to the most negative parts of your life right away.
Did you read my bio, and are you guiding this, or are we just hitting upon these things just chronologically by accident?
I'm trying to go chronologically as much as I can.
Oh my God. Okay, so
I did a lot of research on you. Don't worry about it. I found the nude pictures and everything.
Oh, awesome. Great. They're all over the place. Hannah, are we bumming you out?
No, I'm listening. I'm good.
This has a happy ending, trust me. Don't worry about this.
Well, okay, so I mean, and I'm very open. I'm open about this. So when I was 15 and I started musical theater, I met other people. So I lined up way with the whole gay culture and I started being very very promiscuous in San Francisco. That's when I started hooking up with older guys and online, you know, through gay.com and all that. I graduated high school, and up until that point, I didn't know that I was undocumented, right? So I got into colleges, and then the way I found out I couldn't go was I was up for a scholarship to Berkeley, And they pulled me aside and asked for my, you know, citizenship ID or whatever. And I told them I didn't have it. And I found out that way I got pulled. So then I got into all these schools and couldn't accept because at that time there were no protections for undocumented immigrants. So it would mean I would have to come up with $200, $300 a year to go to these schools, right? Mm-hmm. And that wasn't going to be possible. So I didn't. And then I found out that I couldn't get jobs because you don't have people. And so I became a Craigslist hooker.
When those things were a thing,
When those things, erotic services on Craigslist. And that was really kind of okay. Like, I mean, I didn't think anything of it. I, you know, at the time it felt like it made sense. I needed to make money and, you know.
When you show up at a guy's door, they don't check for documentation.
No. In fact, I hooked up with some like very conservative politicians.
What a surprise.
Right. Isn't that crazy?
No, I mean, that's always the stereotype that they're just like, you know, I'm against gay rights. And then, you know, 5 years later, it turned out to be gay.
Yeah, for sure. Like
so many of them.
I mean, seriously, I ended up at his house and there was like, he was like, keep quiet. I still live with my family and my mother lives upstairs. So it was like an in-law. So he was like, please keep quiet. And, you know, afterwards he literally, you know, was praying and I was like, well, you're still on your knees. So it's convenient.
Well, wait a second. You did sexual things with a man and then he started praying?
Yeah. There was that one time where he did pray. Yes.
Anna, has that ever happened to you?
No, not the praying, the screaming God part. Yeah.
Yeah. I've had people. I've had people say, oh, Jesus, oh God. I've had people cry, but I've never had people start praying.
Yeah. Yeah. He prayed. Yeah.
That must be a good blowjob or whatever you did for.
Oh, I was good. I was good. My saving grace was that these men would fall in love with me. And so I didn't have to have that many customers because they just liked me. And so they were like, I don't want you on the street. They felt like Richard Gere. Like they were like Richard Gere. Aww.
And they were like, Roberts.
Let me rescue you.
Yeah.
And so a couple of those guys kind of helped me along. So.
But this is, but you were into the daddy thing already though.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So it was okay. Like it worked out for me.
So when you see a young good-looking guy, doesn't turn you on?
No, not really.
No, okay.
Yeah, I have a specific type. I do.
Well, Hannah does too. Hannah likes older men too, so it's
And you know what's
got a daddy type
is I'm 35 now, right? And a white guy who's 35 actually looks way older than me, and so I can date my own age now.
That's so you preserved yourself so you could date your own age. Yeah, Hannah likes guys 10 years older than her. And
I'm 36, and my boyfriend now, he's 50.
Great. Perfect. I love older guys. They're great.
Yeah.
What's so great about older guys?
They know how to treat a woman, and they've already been through, or anybody, they know how to treat them. They've already been through all the shit and cheating, and some, like, he already had his kids and raised them, and
for the most part, what they want, and they're not afraid to say it.
Exactly. Yeah, he scooped me up right away. Like, within a month, he's like, be my girlfriend.
Yeah, he's like, oh, this is you? That's it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very forward, yeah.
So, how and why did you transition from musical comedy to, from musical comedy to stand-up comedy?
I was doing musical for several years, you know. And literally, I kept doing productions of Miss Saigon over and over and over and over. And I was just like, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to do any more productions of Miss Saigon. I did 9 of them.
And Butterfly, I would imagine, too, right?
No, I never did M. Butterfly. I never did that. Yeah.
So you got sick of being Miss Saigon.
I was sick of doing Miss Saigon. And so I just wanted a different way to express myself. And so I did stand-up comedy. I took a stand-up comedy class.
Was that in L.A. or was that in San Francisco?
That was in L.A., yes.
Okay. And since then, you've I mean, you're all over. You've been the main thing that that I applaud you for. You've done so many shows and you put on so many shows. You produce Rainbow Pop, the YA showcase at the Laugh Factory, and I've been to a few of those, and they're so much fun.
Thank you. I'm really proud.
I didn't take Hannah to one of them, but something happened that day. But once, hopefully, when the stages come back and Rainbow Pop comes back, we'll all be there, and it'll be great.
Yeah, we'll see. Anything could happen, you know.
Well, how did you get that going? I mean, was that already going and you became the host and producer, or is that something that you came up with?
Oh my God. well, I'm sorry. I laugh at my own jokes. I think I'm hilarious, and sometimes I don't know what I'm laughing about, but I'm laughing, right?
As long as you just tell them, make us laugh, we're fine with it.
Yeah, I was a producer there. I was in development at the Laugh Factory for a while, and they had me co-produce a show down in Long Beach for a year, a solid year with no pay, doing guest spots, just doing producing, right? Like for free. And then they gave me an opportunity to produce a show that they wanted to expand to the Hollywood. So they put me in charge and they said, this is your show. And now you're passed at the Laugh Factory. Here you go. So essentially it ended up like that. The Rainbow Pop was my idea. I like the, it was initially called Comedy Realness.
Mm-hmm.
And then that, there was a booker change and the new booker insisted he wanted a new name. And I'm not going to mention him, but he's an asshole. He told me that he was like, we're gonna name it something new. There was no problem with Comedy Realness. We already had a brand going, but essentially, right. You know, he wanted to just take credit, whatever. So he was like, let's change it. And I recommended Rainbow Pop. And this is a straight white guy. And he was like, nah, it needs to be funny. It's not Rainbow Soda. It needs to be funny. This freaking hipster. And then he said to me, he goes, I got some names for you, okay? How about Crossing Swords and Bumping Donuts? And I was like, I am not calling my LGBT show Crossing Swords and Bumping Donuts.
Who's going to go to that?
And then I was like, no. And he was like, how about Rainbow Trout Theater? And I was like, you mean like fishy lesbians? Hell no. And so Rainbow Pop it was, because eventually the president had to step in and was like, it's going to be Rainbow Pop. We can't hold up the show because you can't decide on a name. And so that guy doesn't like me very much either, because he got in trouble.
Mm. It wasn't Jamie, was it?
No, it was not Jamie.
Okay. Hey, buddy, you got to do the show. It got to be the Rainbow Pop, man. I'm just waiting for you to say that the straight guy you recommended something like you take it up the ass comedy or something. Those are horrible names that he came up with.
Yeah, he thought he was being ironic.
yeah. So. Yeah. But I said this to Hannah. We've had a few. I think I said this when Mia Mars was on. I said this when Chang was on, but. And Joey Gaynor and a few other people, but Laugh Factory is the best club, isn't it?
Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think Laugh Factory is the best club. To me, of all the clubs in L.A., and they're all great, and they all have their own idiosyncrasies, the Laugh Factory is set up to kill.
I am biased, because they really did give me my chance, and they really are my home club, and I feel very much loyal to them. I have a lot of loyalty to the Laugh Factory. I love them very much.
It's kind of about the way the club is set up. If you bomb at the Laugh Factory, and you've been doing comedy more than 6 months or a year, get out, because you just don't know what you're doing. There's no way you can bomb at the Laugh Factory.
Oh, there are, though. I've seen it.
Well, I've seen it, but I've never, in confident comics, I've never seen it. I've never bombed the Laugh Factory, and I've never seen you bomb at the Laugh Factory, so.
Yeah. Have I bombed at the Laugh Factory? I bombed at the Long Beach one.
Okay, maybe, but anyway, you don't bomb a lot, because you go on stage and you just have this infectious energy. Hannah remembers when she saw you a couple of years ago at the Van Nuys Comedy Club, which is not as good as the Laugh Factory, but it's okay. And, you just went up and you were just a ball of energy and a ball of fire. I remember I was sitting with Hannah and her friends, and they were just loving you.
Yeah, we loved you.
We were praising you, Hayden, and saying how funny you were.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Hannah. Praise him some more.
No, you are. You're adorable, and especially talking to you now, I just can't be sad around your presence, it seems like. You'd be the perfect person to, like, live with, too. So it's like every morning you wake up and you're like, yay!
Yeah.
Kind of wants to move in with you.
Great. Please do. I'm lonely.
Well, I was going to say, that's a good segue to your book, which is The Art of Being Yay. Now, there's a lot of power positive thinking books, a lot of law of attraction books. What makes your book different?
It's from personal experience. I put it all out there. So the reason why my book is different on the empowerment level is because, you know how I told you I was a prostitute for a minute there, right?
How could I forget?
Absolutely stopped because I ended up getting HIV. And from that point, I was at such a low. That's when a friend of mine stepped in and sent me to an empowerment workshop. Mm-hmm. And that was the only way that I knew to educate myself. When I went, it changed my life. And so what I've been doing since then for 15 years, right, is studying empowerment concepts, but I didn't tell anybody because I didn't want people to know what I was doing. So I was studying neuro-linguistic programming and, you know, concepts, empowerment concepts from, like, Landmark, studying successful people, modeling, and getting mentored by really successful guys. And so I was applying all of that to the career of comedy and how I can use it to my advantage. And so I am actually living proof, actually, you know, like a lot of empowerment books can be theory, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I feel like I really did start at a place where I was HIV positive, couldn't go to college, undocumented, here I was. And I, layer by layer, learned how to apply the tools that I talk about in the book to my life to achieve results. And here are the results, right? So putting it all out there, like I was HIV positive. I went through this and this and this and this and this. I will put it right there. I have no shame about it. And I'm sharing on that level, which I don't think that a lot of empowerment books have behind them. Mm-hmm.
It's a bunch of entitled white guys. Meanwhile,
well, I don't know that, but people tend to be afraid to share too much about them. And with the empowerment book, I find that there's sometimes a veneer of pristineness around the person, as if they figured it out, right? They're the gurus, and I have no interest in doing that. I want to just say how it was, tell you what worked, tell you what didn't work, and here's the evidence is I applied it to my personal life and here I am, right?
Because mm-hmm. I can't think of anything. Go ahead, Hannah, I'm sorry.
Oh, I said I definitely need to read your book.
Yeah, I'm pretty open.
I'll get it for you, Hannah. We'll definitely both get books. I definitely want to read it, but I mean, I can't think of anything more crushing than a diagnosis of getting HIV. Like in your early 20s.
Losing your lover is more crushing than the diagnosis of HIV.
Yeah, I didn't know if you wanted to talk about that because I met Michael. He was a great guy.
Well, that's what the book's about, right? So
yeah,
this is where the book is. So for the first, between I was 19 and 33, mm-hmm. I was applying the tools I was learning. And my focus is in neuro-linguistic programming. Actually, I'm a master practitioner in neuro-linguistic programming, mm-hmm. only for the purpose of using it for myself. I didn't mean to do it to coach anybody else, okay? I only wanted to coach myself. You can use it on yourself.
Well, let me ask you a question before you get into that.
Yeah.
Is that something you use to write jokes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I got to figure out how to do that. That's interesting.
Absolutely. There are so many ways to work. Like the best advice that I would have for anybody who wants to get into stand-up comedy is you've got to build rapport with your audience in order for them to ride with you. If you do not have a rapport with them, then things will not work. Even if your joke is the most brilliant ever, it just will not. So I made it a priority to make sure if I step on stage, my priority number one is make rapport with the audience. And there are specific ways to do that. And if you know how to read body language, right? If you know how to read the room, through some of the tactics that I learned in neuro-linguistic programming, I can pick out what points will have the biggest impact to create that rapport, right? Yeah. And so I was doing stuff like that. Also, I was using it for business, like sales tactics, like figuring out what is important to this person as far as what they want to do, and how can I bring that to them so that I can get them to make the purchase.
Right.
Like, give me a comedy show, or, you know, sell a comedy show, or like, how can I use what I know to move myself forward, sales-wise, performance-wise, everything. And it's so such an incredible tool that I'm so behind it.
Yeah, the second part is what I really need help on. But Hannah, you know what he was saying about getting people's attention when you get on stage?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we had Chang on and we had Tom Dreesen on, and they said the same thing?
Yeah, mm-hmm. They did.
So. And I've never met them, so... I mean, I know them, but I've never talked to them.
I mean, they're two of the best.
They're great guys, yeah.
You never met Chang or Tom Dreesen? You,
Me?
Yeah.
No, I've met them. Chang's a friend of mine. But
I thought so, yeah.
Concept, yeah.
But yeah, they're saying that you have to get the crowd's attention, and you're right.
Absolutely. So for 14 years, I used this for tangible results, right? Audience, or business results, or sales, or what have you. After Michael died, I became so miserable, like suicidal. Like, I really loved that guy. Mark, you met him. Like, I met him,
and I remember seeing you shortly after he passed away, and it wasn't the same Aiden. You were holding up a good front, but you could tell it wasn't. You didn't have the A.
I was not happy. I was. It was such. It's all in the book, but it was such a disturbing. When you find out your partner has cancer, and you love him, that I would have done anything. I would have died. I wish I would have died. Like, yeah. And I still kind of do. Aww. Instead of him.
But Hannah, let me go back to the good times when Aiden and Michael were together. There's some couples that you see and you're like, they're not going to last. They're going to break up in a year or so, or they're just mm-hmm. not right for each other. And then there are couples that you're like, they're perfect for each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I hate to quote Sylvester Stallone from Rocky, but they fell in each other's gaps. And that's what Aiden and Michael did for each other. And you could tell they were just, they weren't necessarily joined at the hip, but they were, there was an energy in the room between them, and you could just tell these two were destined to be together.
Yeah. Yeah, and we were joined at the hip, actually. Because you know what he was doing? Even though we were apart, he would check out the room and make sure everything was filled in. He was looking for audience reactions and actually monitoring what the room temperature was like while I was needing to do the work of the producer, right?
Right.
Seemed like just a regular audience member, but he was actually looking out for me in a big way. And he really had my back. He really had my back. Mm-hmm. And I can say, you know, we were truly, truly in love. It was amazing. An incredible experience. Yeah.
It was palpable if you were in the room with both of you.
Yeah. Yeah. Really loved him. And then he dies. And what do you do? You know,
what did you do?
After, I first of all, I became suicidal. I didn't want to live. And then I decided that, okay, like, I can't kill myself. I don't think I can actually do that. Mainly at that time for my family. And I was like, okay, I'll stay alive, but I'm not going to stay alive feeling this way. I can't feel like this every day. It feels too bad. I have to figure out a way to feel better, because this is not, I can't, mm-hmm. I couldn't, it hurt way too much.
Right.
And so I was like, I'm going to stay, but I'm going to figure out a way to be happy being here. Otherwise I can't. So then what I started doing was researching how I can go for the result, the goal of an emotional end. So for those 14 years, I went for producing, I went for, you know, winning the audience over, I went for money, I went for success or what have you. And now what I tried to do was use those tools that I gathered to an emotional result, right? So how do I use that so that I can be happier? What is being happier? How do I get out of, like, what can I do? And so then the result, the goal became emotional, not tangible, out of sheer desperation, right? And when I started doing that, that's when the Art of Being Yay came about, because my life changed. It completely shifted everything in my life in a big, big way. And I'm so happy to be able to share that in the book.
Now, is yay an acronym? Is that an acronym? Does Y stand for something? A stand for something? Y stand for something? Or?
No.
What yay!
I wanted to write the book. I wanted to call it The Art of Being Gay because I'm gay.
Yeah.
And I was fun, but it was pointed out to me that, you know, it's kind of limiting, and you don't want people to have an idea. So I changed it to gay. But the thing is, like, it actually lines up with me well because people look at me and they think I'm yay. Yay is something that they would use to describe me, if you ever, you know. And so it worked out perfect.
Yeah, because you have been described as the gayest man on earth. I can't believe somebody said that to your face, but apparently somebody did.
I am actually not the gayest man on earth. If you think I'm the gayest man on earth.
I didn't think so, but apparently somebody did.
Oh, my God. I am not.
I was from Brent, is, but
yeah, Brent.
No, I don't know. How did you get Margaret Cho to do the forward?
I asked her.
That'll do it.
Open for her a couple times, and I've been on shows with her, and we have the connection, you know. And
I was gonna say, how far back do you go with Margaret?
A couple years. And what's so cool is when I first moved to the United States, it was 1994, and she had her own show, All American Girl, in 1994.
Right.
And she was the first Asian person that I saw on television on my primetime TV in 1994. And I remember thinking how cool. So for me to have a foreword from her and her stamp of approval on this project is, it means the world. It's so amazing.
Yeah, I mean, she's got to be a hero of yours.
Yeah, she really is.
And I met her a couple of times. She's very nice. And but I don't think she would do the forward for my book, but I'm glad she did the forward for your book.
You don't know that.
We'll see what happens. But The Art of Being Gay, I think everybody should be gay. Now, this is a good expansion for you because now you're bringing this to offices, to the corporate world.
Yeah.
And you're not going to stop till everybody's yay like you.
Yeah, because everybody wants to be happier, right?
Yeah, agreed.
Everybody wants to be happier. And so when I started researching this, how to be happier, I took the approach that the world would have you take initially, and it failed to a tremendous degree. It was really, really terrible. So what happened was after Michael died, I was like, I gotta be happier. Oh, you know what? And then I sold myself on the story. I was like, this is my opportunity to really make a life that I really want. So you know what? I'm gonna exercise. I'm gonna go and do comedy like seven, you know, eight times a day or whatever. I'm gonna meet up with friends and surround myself with community and all these external answers for how to feel better, right? Like you're supposed to get together with friends and call your friends all the time and hang out, you know. And I even went on dates, which is ridiculous. And, eat nice foods, treat yourself well, go for a long walk on the beach, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
All of that completely blew up in my face. Utterly. Because what it was a pushing against a negative emotion, essentially. So I would be feeling negative emotion and all these things are supposed to help me get away from this. If I fix this, then I won't feel this. And that is the traditional approach to happiness that everybody would have you take. Everybody will tell you, what do you want? Oh, maybe you can get inspired about your career. Maybe you can get, in a relationship or whatever. So we all wait for this to change. But actually, that has very little to do with your happiness level and what you ultimately want. So that's what I really discovered in a big, big way. And how you can really take charge of your own emotional condition. You can take charge of it. You can incrementally increase your internal happiness thermostat, that it's at a certain level, Then what happens is everybody around you freaking notices. Then they go, I want to work with you. Will you go out with me? Will you be my friend? Will you? And things line up as a result of your happy energy that you're carrying with you, not the other way around. You get right. what I'm saying?
No, yeah, you're going from the outside in, and you really need to go from the inside out.
You have to, if you want to make change to your happiness level.
Okay, Hannah, take a note.
I'm just taking notes and listening and learning because I definitely need to do as you say.
Yeah.
I would say you've been happier lately, though, Hannah, because not just because you got a new boyfriend, but I think something happened inside of you that attracted that and other things that have been going good in your life.
Yeah, you know, I kind of, because of this whole, like, pandemic thing, I kind of stepped out of, like, my comfort zone where I'm like, no, I only hide at night because I have a health condition. I don't like going out during the day. But now I'm pushed to go to the beach with my best friend and my boyfriend. I'm learning to bodyboard and just getting more confident.
Yeah, it's wonderful, you know?
That's good. So you're feeling more yay these days, Hannah.
Yeah, you know what? I am, yeah.
So Aiden,
problems that you face that cause you the unhappiness, it has to be resolved.
Yeah.
It will not be ignored. It will not be ignored with an answer outside. It must be resolved, looked at directly, and resolved.
Yeah. And Hannah, also, if you want to just smile, I recommend. Although you know it's a bit a few years ago, but Aiden had a YouTube series, My Life on the F List.
Yeah, that's right.
It was very funny, but you described yourself as an untalented comedian, which is absolutely could be further from the truth.
Well, it was for the show. Yeah.
I know you're taking off on a. It was a takeoff of Kathy Griffin, who was hardly on the D-list herself, but yeah. But it's very funny. So, yeah, so there's a lot of YouTube stuff you got to check out, Hannah. You got to check out his stand-up. You got to check out the F-list. You got to check out also him singing More Than a Feeling. And
oh, yeah. That first.
And a takeoff of We Will Rock You at the Ice House. A lot of stuff. But, Aiden, when was the last time you were on stage in front of a crowd?
I went to Montana like a month and a half ago.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
And that was the first time in like 3 months or 6 months?
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was awesome. I really loved it.
Yeah, you went with Angie and
yeah.
It was it's so different than the Zoom shows and the you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I love stand-up comedy.
and in Montana, you would think it'd be too conservative for you, but they must love you out there.
I have found in my personal experience that people don't care. if you approach with the attitude, when I do stand-up comedy at all kinds of small towns, right? If I approach with the attitude of, hey, you paid for a ticket. We're here to have fun. I'm not here to change your beliefs on anything. I just want us to have fun while we're here, okay? They want to have fun. We have a common goal. We want to have fun. And so they really don't care, in my experience.
As long as you're funny, they don't care.
They do not care, yeah. And if you build rapport, that's it. If you build rapport, that's... like... I mean, I've had guys with, like, literally Confederate flags on them come up to me after the show, shake my hand, and go, well, I've never seen a gay Asian before, but, you know, I really like that. I really like that. This is my girlfriend. My girlfriend, you know, and it was an interesting moment, you know? Like.
It's so weird. It's so weird to be in a town where they've never seen a gay Asian. I can't even fathom it, but. I've always lived in big cities my whole life.
Well, I was in Sanford, Florida, actually, where the Trayvon Martin thing happened, and I played Bonkers. Ooh. And I was in the bathroom, and after the show, I was in a stall, and I heard these two guys talking by the urinal. And I heard this. This one guy said, yeah, you know, we don't... And they were all white. They were all white and me. And I heard him say, you know, we don't have a lot of diversity around here. You know, a gay Asian would do it. And I just thought that was a sweet moment, even though, you know, it was very, general or generalized or whatever, that's how you start kind of making some movement, right? Like you, they see me as a person, maybe not just something that they see on TV, right?
And so, they wouldn't mind you moving in next door, which is great.
Yeah, I thought it was sweet.
It is sweet. And that's actually, and where does the time go? That's actually a good point to end on. Although yeah. We'd love to have you back. I think Hannah would love to have you back every week. But
Hannah, keep in touch with me, huh? You can send a Facebook message or whatever. Oh,
definitely will.
Say what you just said because you kind of faded out.
I said I definitely will. I'm going to keep in touch.
Yeah. Well, I think you said you loved Hayden, which I think we both do.
Oh, of course.
So, but I encourage everybody who's been listening to this to go to Amazon or go to your local bookstore, support your local bookstore, or where, you know, Barnes & Noble or wherever, and get The Art of Being Yay by Aidan Park. That's A-I-D-A-N Park. Mm-hmm. Now, this is the last question I have for you because I forgot to ask this before.
Yeah.
Why did you change your name and why Aidan?
Oh, I was joining SAG, Screen Actors Guild, you know. And I was so sick of people spelling my name wrong at Starbucks, Sungmin Park. They couldn't do it. And so I was literally like, I was like, I'm changing my name. And then I changed my name to Aidan and then spelled it wrong. It's A-I-D-E-N. And I spelled it A-I-D-A-N. And it's an Irish name. So, you know, there you go. The joke's on me.
It's a cute name, though.
I think it's a cute. I like it.
I like it, too.
Was there a specific Aidan you had in mind?
I'm sorry?
Was there a specific Aidan you had in mind?
No, I just wanted to be the first letter. I knew I wanted to be the first A, you know.
Ah.
And I thought I had a lot of energy back then, so I was like, okay, well, Aidan seems like a fitting name. It seems like a name of an energetic young man.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank
you,
Aidan.
Definitely still have that energy. You still have the yay. And anybody listening, and we have quite a depressed crew out there, if you want to get some positive power in your life and really get some good advice and an amazing life story. Yeah. That's not even halfway done. I could just imagine what your second book will be.
May I plug something? Can I plug something real fast?
Well, plug everything you want. Plug away.
So The Art of Being Yay, at the end of each chapter, there's a QR code that you flash and it leads you to my site where I have a 12-minute accompanying video that explains the concept of each chapter that I talk about.
Right? Oh, about
be happier. And so if you don't have access to, say, money or whatever, you can just go to my site, Aidan Park, AIDANPARK.com, where there are resources. There's blog posts about inspiration and how to make yourself happier and what happiness is all about. There's also a values evaluation worksheet where you can take a look at your values and see how you're doing and living in alignment with that. You know, there's all kinds of videos and resources. So, and it's all available for free. So please just go to my site and check it out if you want to feel better, but you can't get access to the book for whatever reason. You know, I just want happiness. So
yeah. Go to AidanPark.com and buy the book. And I got to tell you, you're much less creepy than Tony Robbins. So definitely.
Am I? I don't know.
He's got that big head and the weird voice. I don't know. I'm not. He's got some good stuff, but I always thought he doesn't look human. There's something weird about him.
I think he's a wonderful man.
No, he is, but he is. Yeah, he's just. He just. There's something off-putting. Like there's something that I just can't put my finger on. He's just too big, I think.
To me, it seems like he's the main problem. Like you said, right? The why is this different than other empowerment books? Because there's an untouchability to a lot of those guys who present material, like
right.
You can change your life. It's like almost they're untouchable and I'm touchable.
Yes, you can touch Aidan.
You can touch me all you want, please.
I've touched you before. That's
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Anyway, AidanPark.com. Get The Art of Being Yay. Aidan, this has been such a pleasure. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Please thank come you back so much. Me.
Hannah?
Yes.
And follow Aidan on social media and what's your what's your Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and all that?
Aidan Park Show. AIDANPARK Show. Aidan Park Show.
Aidan Park Show on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Hey Hannah Box 666 on Instagram and also
TikTok.
Check out our other show, Vegans Unlimited.
Vegans Uncensored.
Vegans Uncensored. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I didn't mean to mess that up. Vegans Uncensored. That's also on all social media. Dark Mark Show and Goth Comedia on all social media. Everybody, have a wonderfully yay week.
Bye, guys.